So I'm Barrett Golding, a radio producer.
I'm Joseph Verbanek, an English professor here at Montana State University. We pedaled the summer prior to last from St. Charles to just shy of Mobridge, South Dakota, following the Lewis and Clark Trail and, more importantly, I think, at least to us, the Missouri River. And this past summer, that was 1,100 miles?
Yeah, 1,100 in 2001.
Took us roughly 3 weeks of pedaling time, another week overall of driving and resting, days off, et cetera.
Birthday at your house, at your folks' house.
And at the omnipresent Cattleman's Saloon afterwards. On the Standing Rock Reservation. And this past summer, we started in Astoria, Oregon, biked down to Fort Clatsop in Cape Disappointment, and pedaled back to Bozeman. That was a journey of 989 miles. That took us 3 weeks, just under. Prior to the pedaling segment, we kayaked 130 miles.
150, yeah.
150 on the Missouri. That was what we did. And how many miles we went and how long it took us.
We were hiking one day in the hills. It was about February. And Joe just said, well, why don't we just go? And it sounded good. So we did. And I like bike touring. It's pretty much my favorite way to get around. And, you know, I look for opportunities to do that. And I'd been thinking about Lewis and Clark for way too long, and I'm not even sure why, but I just had been because I live out here. And that's the route we took. And when we got on the route, what ended up being much more interesting than Lewis and Clark was the rivers. And, you know, Lewis and Clark is part of the history of the rivers, but mainly we got interested in the Missouri River and the Columbia River and, to a lesser extent, the Rocky Mountains. We already know the Rockies. Joe and I were fully sick of Lewis and Clark, not very far into it, especially when you're confronted with this mania of people falling. I mean, I'm sure they're having a good old time, but, boy, the more they're interested, the less we could care. But what we are interested in is in the Missouri River. That's, you know, that was cool. The Missouri flooded on us.
Yeah.
We were in the Missouri River pedaling and then walking, just like Lewis and Clark.
Exactly. pulling our gear with us along the way as fish and worms and, in some cases, snakes were getting out of the way in the water in front of us. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was an arduous way to go. 10 miles.
Well,
but
it was nothing like turning around and going backwards, which is simply unacceptable. Talk about arduous. That's just, I guess we probably did that once or twice, but boy, that's hard to do.
Yes. I think that both of us, either by birth or by relocation, consider ourselves Westerners, for whatever that term connotes or denotes. And both of us have a decided interest in what happens around us in the West, how people perceive the West, how people in the West perceive themselves. And at least for me, I was interested in seeing what we've done in this territory that has been civilized in the West. I mean, I grew up about 15 miles away from the Missouri River, seeing those two jokers on signposts every time we drove down the highway. And to this day, I still can't recall a single grade school, middle school, or high school history lecture on Lewis and Clark that made any sense to me whatsoever. And yet, pedaling along their route occasionally gave me a much finer sense for our own migrations as a culture across the landscape, and fueled my interest a little more than I had previously thought. I'm just under a quarter Sioux, not enrolled on the – I grew up on the Standing Rock Reservation in North and South Dakota.
A Jew and a Sioux.
Yes.
Hit the road.
Right, right. All sorts of room for slapstick there.
There's a lot of things that Joe and I talk about, and they're – they're not going to make it to the shows because of the way we've decided to present the interviews as little vignettes, which works for so many reasons. But what it doesn't do is get some of these grand themes that you, one might discuss over, you know, bicycling and whiskey and campfires and whatever. And I guess the biggest one is the idea of the frontier and what we saw out there and what we read about it. And Joe, I hope you'd kind of present that idea because I don't think people understand it.
We had we left in both trips a community that has been growing at a rate that far surpasses its infrastructure, and passed through areas of the country that are considered civilized, populated. But what we found in reality is something that historian Patricia Limerick and Dayton Duncan have both written about, in that in many places in the West, many counties in the West, the population density has dropped below what Turner's frontier thesis maintained was the minimum for the frontier to become civilized. That is 3 people per square mile, if I remember correctly. And there are plenty of places out here, even in states that we think of as fairly densely populated, like Missouri or Iowa, that is actually the case. The urban cores in most of the Western states are growing, but I think not at a rate commensurate with the diminished population in the rural areas. So there are fewer and fewer people. In fact, the stretch that was most notable on was the stretch that we kayaked. There were ruins of foundations and even communities completely inaccessible by road, only accessible maybe by river or horseback, and there was nothing there. Foundations, wrecked homesteads, and these, some of these may even have gone back as recent as 100 years, but there's no one living there. And so, you know, we think of the country as being interconnected, as there not being these gaps in space, really. But there are. There are places where you go miles and miles and miles without seeing another soul. And I think that's a fascinating element, particularly in light of the predictions that most of the state tourism councils along the trail are making for the number of people that are supposed to be visiting during the 3 years of the bicentennial celebration. We've heard, quote, estimates from anywhere from 7 million to 25 million people.
10% of all Americans.
Spread across the 3 years.
Are going to travel some part of the trail, yeah.
And in places like some of the remote areas like Kipp's Landing, north of Lewiston and the Missouri River, to imagine more than 15 people congregating there is going to radically change, I think, not only the physical environment but the social environment, because there are very, very few people up there right now. And so that's a curiosity I have as well.
Just to add a little bit to that, when Turner wrote about the end of the frontier, it was somewhere around 1890-something, would you say?
Mm-hmm.
It was a big deal. I don't know what kind of a big deal, but it was a huge deal for America to reimagine itself as not having a frontier anymore, because it had spent its whole time thinking that there's always a place to go. There's always a place to move into. If you don't work out here, you'll go into the frontier and make it there. And when that was not a possibility, according to Turner, America had to come up with a different vision of itself. So since we have dropped back to the level where it is now a frontier again, many of these places, we must have to do some revisioning again. But I don't hear anybody doing that. The other thing that struck me about that, or us, is that we would go places that it is entirely possible that it would be more likely to have seen humanity out there 100 or 200 years ago than it would be now. We think of Lewis and Clark walking across the wilderness, but it was not a wilderness then. There were people there, big stretches of the trip. The Indians might have avoided them, but they were probably watching them. And then on the Columbia River side, they were staying with a different camp every single night. Mm-hmm. We went through stretches and, you know, especially when we go hiking in these areas, you don't see anybody. And you probably – you would have had a good chance of seeing somebody 200 years ago.
Yes, yes.
When you're on these recording expeditions, I like to call them that because that's what the Lewis Library of Congress, you know, sent people out in the 30s with the WPA for that, recording expeditions. And when you're out on these, you're always looking for a pattern, like a password where people will open up to you. And at one point, we kind of thought it was going to be the local environmental situation because you don't go 50 miles where the environmental discussion changes, not even slightly, but the entire subject. So on the coast, they're dredging the harbor, and that means good and bad things to the same person sometimes.
Right.
And 50 miles down, there's the Portland Slough, which is a big fiasco, and they're not sure what to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
And every 50 miles, there's something else. And it's not really – the reason maybe they're not talking about it is one thing is they're not one thing. They're individual local issues that are huge to those people. But 50 miles up, they might not even know the condition exists.
Mm-hmm. I've never been quite so depressed as the weeks following getting back and not having that thing to do and not having it ahead of me. I still have yet to figure out what the neuroses behind that is. But, I mean, it felt like an accomplishment. Yes, we biked over, 2,000 miles of this country's roads and along its rivers.
Through the heartland, yeah.
And
we got a lot of good – we talked to a lot of good people.
Photos and tape and a website and a pretty lively discussion at Transom. But somehow I don't think of those things as the reason we went out. And what I got out of it is some observations about where we live and how we live and what it instilled in me is this almost pathological desire to keep observing that and keep observing it in that fashion. I mean, I've been a bicyclist since I was 5 years old, but I've only come to bike touring later, the last three summers with Barrett. But I want to keep doing this. I want to keep observing these and writing down my own thoughts and observations and researching routes and then taking 2 or 3 or 4 weeks a year at the very least to go and see these things.
You know, the bicycle is a harsh mistress. She sits there and stares. She says nothing. You're just steel. But, boy, it takes over your life.
Yeah.
We met this one guy, when I say old Indian guy, I mean he was like 70, but he's in really good shape. Former canoe racer from Maine. But what's that, Penobscot or whatever that tribe is up there. And he was canoeing. I mean, our little trip. That would hardly make a dent in where he was going. He was canoeing the Lewis and Clark Trail, yeah, but he'd already come down the Hudson and down to New Orleans and all this up the Mississippi, and he had all these plans, and he was actually, you know, closer to done than starting. And he just said, "What I think is simplest is it's good to use your body every day," and that's true.
Yes. What was the there was something from James Rhonda that I had scribbled down from that
that's
Time magazine piece, if I can find that quickly. Oh, here it is. It was from his the Time magazine thing that they did on Lewis and Clark this summer. His quote is, "It's the emblematic American journey. In U.S. history, there's always a tension between home and the road. We talk a good talk about the joys of home, but the truth is we're obsessed with the road." And I think that our penchant for motion and addictions thereof is pretty emblematic of that, pretty indicative.
Yeah, and like most addictions, you know, when you do it and you're finished, basically what you want to do is do it again.
It's
everything else gets in the way, like work and family.
Right.
And so you wait another year or whatever the prescribed period is before your next fix is needed.